Supporters say it promotes solar energy in Florida and protects citizens from scams. Critics call it a measure designed to confuse voters and protect the special interests of utility companies. Just ahead, a closer look at the controversial Florida Solar Amendment 1 as we take your calls. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And just ahead, what are your thoughts and questions about Amendment 1? Voters will decide in November. We're going to go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Then later, hear about Year Up, a new youth development program in Jacksonville, plus what's being done to prevent the spread of HIV on the First Coast. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, it's one of the more controversial state constitutional amendments voters will decide in November. Supporters of Amendment 1, known as the Florida Solar Amendment, say it would allow residents in the state to install solar panels on their homes and protect consumers from fraud at the same time. Opponents say the amendment is deceptive and nothing more than a power grab by the state's utility companies. We're beginning the hour with a closer look at Amendment 1. We welcome by phone Screven Watson, board member of Consumers for Smart Solar, in support of the amendment. Screven Watson, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. It's a pleasure to be here. And before we start,
and one second, Mr. Watson. Also on the phone, Dr. Stephen Smith from the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. He's leading the opposition to Amendment 1. Stephen Smith, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa. I look forward to the conversation.
Thank you. And here's our question to callers. What are your questions and comments about Amendment 1, known as the Florida Solar Amendment? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on our Facebook page. Screven Watson of Consumers for Smart Solar, let's begin with you. What is Amendment 1?
Well, Amendment 1 is, as your lead-in said, I mean, it does three things and three things only, Melissa. Number one, it gives homeowners and businesses the right to generate their own electricity at their home or business, puts that right in the Constitution. Number two, it leaves government in the process. It doesn't expand or enhance government's role. It just retains government's role to be involved in the process to protect consumers as this wonderful energy source grows throughout Florida. And then thirdly, and probably most importantly, it makes sure that that same government that stays in the system has the ability to maintain and watch the situation. And if we ever get to a point in Florida, Melissa, we're not there now, we won't be there next year, but at some point down the line, as solar energy expands, if there becomes a point in time that people who do not choose solar or can't afford solar are somehow, you know, being tasked with upkeeping the grid, unfairly having to upkeep the electric grid that you and I and all your listeners are plugged into, then government can evaluate the situation and make sure there's a fairness in the system.
Okay.
So those are the three things it does. It does no more than that. It allows you to generate electricity, protects consumers, and makes sure the system is fair.
And we'll go to your calls on Amendment 1 in just a moment at 549-2937. Stephen Smith, representing the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, your group has joined a diverse coalition, a bipartisan coalition, opposing this measure, saying that it's primarily funded by investor-owned utilities. Why are you opposed?
So there's three reasons, and thanks, Melissa, for the opportunity. First of all, this is funded by the big monopoly utilities in the state of Florida. They have spent $21 million to date and likely to go higher. Why are they spending that money? Follow the money. What they're afraid of is that if customer-owned solar, people start generating more of their own power, they're going to buy less power from these big monopoly utilities. They have a captive rate base, and they want to control the market. The second thing is, this paves the way, Amendment 1, why you need to vote no on Amendment 1, paves the way for barriers to customer-owned solar. Buried in the wording of this amendment, and you can go online and read it, it says this is to, quote-unquote, protect non-solar customers from subsidizing solar customers. There is no place in here where they define what the word subsidizing in is. They know it is a very controversial, inflammatory term, and what they're going to do is they're going to put punitive, discriminatory charges against customer-owned solar in order to limit the market growth of solar.
All right.
The utilities only want solar they do. I've got one other point.
Okay.
And the last point is they're offering a lot of very intentionally misleading wording. Like they're saying the right to own and lease solar as if voters vote for this, they have that right. They already have that right. They don't need it put in the state constitution. They're also talking about consumer protection, but there is no new consumer protections in this whatsoever. They're using fear-mongering techniques to scare seniors and others to think that there's some sort of scam going on in Florida when there's really not.
All right.
So it's eye candy.
Now, Screven Watson, what would you say to critics of this amendment? They say it's deceptive, intentionally misleading, and designed to protect the utility monopoly across the state on power, that it would actually make it harder to get affordable solar. What's your response to those critics?
Thanks, Melissa, for giving me that chance. You know, Steve does a good job of representing his out-of-state solar clients, and he's well-meaning, but nothing in this amendment says anything similar to what Steve's parade of horribles just went through. Let me tell you, you have intelligent listeners, and here's is what I would ask them to do. Read the amendment. I know they'll do that when they vote, but read it ahead of time, because it says nothing that Steve just walked through. All it says, as you and I discussed, was you have a right to generate your own electricity. And here's the thing. It doesn't enhance government's role, but we all like government when it protects us. In fact, a lot of Steve's clients love the same government when they give them tax breaks and net metering, which the solar industry loves, and rightfully so. It's the same group of oversight that gave them the things that they love. Yet in this instance, they don't want, and they've run legislation, Melissa, year after year, and they have their own constitutional amendment that basically says, you know what, government, in this instance, we don't want you involved in solar energy.
True.
And that's
not
dangerous.
True.
That's very dangerous.
Steven. Steven, go. Let Steven respond, and then I do want to get to a few calls. Go ahead, Steven, and then we'll go to everyone's calls.
So the point is, you already have the right to own and lease solar in the state of Florida. There's nothing new. There is nobody trying to take away the government, quote-unquote, protection that this particular utility lobbyist is advocating for.
It does nothing,
Mr. Watson,
Steve,
works for the big utilities, and so what he's trying to do is misrepresent the fact. You have the right to own and lease solar. You have these protections. You will have no new rights. You will have no new protections.
Steven Smith, let me ask you as a quick follow-up. Amendment 1 does seem to have the support of the majority of those who've been polled, although some critics of the polling say it asked a misleading question. But let me ask you, to get 60% approval of this, it appears that more than 60% of Florida voters are poised to vote yes on 1. They also approved Amendment 4 this summer, which was another solar initiative. So what would you say to the voters who seem open to Amendment 1?
This is a monopoly wolf in solar sheets clothing. This is what they've done intentionally by using these eye candy phrases. And knowing how popular solar is, they have slipped the poison pill, the Trojan horse, into the language by not defining what subsidization is. And so everybody loves solar. That's why we got 73% this summer. Interestingly, the utilities put no money in supporting Amendment 4, although they claim to be for it. They've put $21 million into this amendment. And the other thing that you need to know is there is no solar company in the state of Florida that is supporting this. Mr. Lobbyist has just said that I work for out-of-state solar companies. I am in Orlando today at the state conference with the solar companies, Florida Solar Energy Association. They are 100% against this because this is an anti-solar amendment.
And let's go to some calls right now as we talk about Amendment 1. Mark is in Mayport. Hi, Mark. Thanks for holding.
Hey,
you're on the air.
How you doing?
Good. Go ahead.
Just the things about the property rights. I mean, the courts have already ruled that the sunshine, I have a right to the sunshine. If someone next to me builds something that blocks, puts shade on my panels, I can actually have them take that down. The government role in protecting that right, I don't need the government to protect that right for me. Last, the grid maintenance, my solar panels don't generate power at night, so I use the grid at night. But the grid is number one, unreliable. The infrastructure is not, they're not putting any money into the infrastructure to improve it. This will force them to improve the grid.
So are you supporting Amendment 1?
No.
You're against Amendment 1. Okay, thanks, Mark. Thanks for that call. Screven Watson, what about, I hope you were able to hear his call. What about his comments, Mark in Mayport?
Yeah, thank you. I think he brings up a very good point, his second point about the grid. You know, we're the Sunshine State, but we also have storms. We have a hurricane approaching. Of course, you don't get sunshine at night. So guess what? Even solar users are plugged into that electric grid. When they want that microwave to work or the air conditioner or their lights to come on at night, they have to be plugged into that grid. And by the way, Melissa, they also sell their electricity, their excess electricity, back to the grid. So they use the grid both coming and going. And that's great. But the fact is that Mr. Smith and his out-of-state clients have often tried to say that solar users should not have to pay 1 cent
for the use of that grid.
The fact is that they should have to be, and you read their amendment that's still alive, basically said they could not charge a fee to use that grid.
Go ahead, Stephen.
Let me clarify this. This is misinformation by the monopolies and their proxy spokesman here. We have never said that anybody should not pay for the use of the grid. Matter of fact, everybody that has solar on their home, they still basically pay fixed charges associated with the standard fee. All they do is they get to sell their power back at a fair rate, and then the utilities turn around and sell that to their neighbors. They're not skirting their support for the grid. Matter of fact, there was a study, and we put it up on our website. You can go to votenoon1.org, look at the fact check. The Brookings Institute did a study that said that solar customers bring more value to the grid than they take away from
okay.
the grid.
Okay, and Screven Watson, let me ask you as a follow-up. Screven Watson, given that the investor-owned utilities are the primary financial backers of Amendment 1, I'd still like an answer as to the perception that the utilities have a vested interest in maintaining the energy status quo in this state. What about that perception, given that 1 is primarily backed by the utilities?
We're lucky to have the support of the utilities, and I want to talk about that. We are also, though, and I want to talk to Steve, keeps talking about this being a utility. We are lucky to have a lot of support around this state, Melissa, that has nothing to do with utilities. The Florida NAACP supports this effort. The Florida Farm Bureau, the Florida Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and we're going to be rolling out some major endorsements over the next 3 or 4 days. This is not just utilities. That makes it easy for Mr. Smith to have all these parade of horribles and make this boogeyman that everybody's scared about. Let me answer your question, Melissa. Steve, I get a chance to ask the question that she asked me. The utilities, this is not, if you read the amendment, this is not some bouquet of roses handed to anybody, including the utilities. Listen, what Mr. Smith and his clients, his out-of-state solar clients, have tried to do time and time again is come in and they've made a litmus test, Melissa, on solar, whether you're pro-solar or anti-solar, based on their business model. And we disagree. We believe the current system works, and the current system protects consumers. And by the way, I don't work for the utility companies, never have, but I can venture a guess.
You're being paid by the utility company.
I'm not, Stephen. That's an outright, that's a lie, and you know it. Number two is,
are you being paid by the utility companies to?
Where's the money coming from? Where's the money
on the campaign?
All right. And Screven and Stephen, I've got to get a few more callers on the air. There's so much interest in this. I appreciate your passion on both sides, but let me get a few callers on the air. Let's go to Adam in Ponte Vedra now. Adam, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
No problem. Thank you for having me. I have to agree with the caller before. I am against one, and I'm against one for a number of reasons, many of which have already been stated. What hasn't been stated is I'm against one because of the future. Solar is the future. Renewable energy is the future. And by not having everyone contribute toward what is a movement toward the future, that's only going to limit it's only going to increase the amount of time that it takes for solar to get adopted, for the grid to be updated for solar.
All right.
Infrastructure improvements.
Melissa.
Okay, thank you for that. That's Adam
that
in Ponte Vedra. Now, Stephen Smith, obviously you agree with Adam, given that Florida is ranked 17th in solar power generated, and we are the Sunshine State. So I know you agree with him. But let me get Screven now with Consumers for Smart Solar to respond to that. What about the no on one vote, Screven, people that think this will actually limit the proliferation of solar in Florida, which does lag behind other southeastern states in this sector?
Well, you know, Melissa, I just simply don't believe that's the case. It's solar. You know, Steve says nothing. This amendment does nothing. It doesn't change the status quo. Well, let's just take that point for 1 second. Solar is growing in Florida. We went from 6,500 solar-related jobs to 8,000 solar-related jobs in the last year. We have more users, personal homeowners and businesses using. Solar is growing. What this amendment does, Melissa, is promote it. All you have to do is read the language. It gives that right.
Why are the solar companies against it?
Which is a safe place to put it so people like Steve and his out-of-state solar clients can't mess with it in the future. Because you'd say, well,
Melissa,
why would anybody ever want to do that? Well, Steve's clients lock people into 20-year leases like they did
in
Arizona. And here's a quick homework assignment for your listeners. Google Arizona solar fraud. Google Arizona solar.
We're not talking about Arizona.
Yeah, but Screven, what? Okay, let's. I appreciate the. I think we have a very clear picture now of where you both are. Let's get a few more listeners on the line as we go to Dennis in Atlantic Beach. Go ahead, Dennis.
You know the thing that the proponent for one hasn't made clear is that when the people want to install solar, this amendment is going to place it so that they can't get their money back out of their solar systems in an equitable or reasonable amount of time, because the companies are going to be forced, the people are going to be forced to sell their company, their power, their excess power, back to the power companies at a reduced rate, less than what they're buying it from the companies for. There's no parity. I mean, they're making it impossible for these people. If you wanted to do it for a 20-year lease, these guys are making it so it's going to take 30 or 40 years to recoup your loss, you know, your investment. So, he's being disingenuous. When he says, oh, yeah, we'll buy the power back. Yeah, you'll buy the power back at pennies on the dollar. And that's all I got. Thank you.
All right.
And, Melissa, this is exactly right. This is the poison pill that is in here, is this phrase about non-solar customers, quote-unquote, not subsidizing. This is what the utilities are going to do, and this is what this utility spokesman is not telling you. They want to put punitive charges on in the name of, quote-unquote, protecting consumers and maintaining the grid, that are going to cause the economics to not work for customer-owned solar. That is what's going on here, and people need to get the straight talk. The utilities would not be pumping $21 million into this if they weren't trying to protect their market share.
Screven, go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. Nothing. I would say, you know, this is something that Steve says every time he gets on one of these things, and I respect the view of your caller. I do, but there is nothing in Amendment 1 that has one thing to do with net metering.
So there's no poison pill then, as Stephen Smith said, there's no poison pill inserted in the language that would protect the shareholder profits of the investor-owned utilities?
No, ma'am. In fact, the majority of the Supreme Court said exactly that. They tout one member of the Supreme Court that disagreed, but the majority of the Supreme Court and the revenue estimating that did three field hearings and spent 3 months, they say in the language that this has no poison pill, has nothing to do with subsidies, by the way, other than to make sure there's a fairness. And Melissa, here's the simple question for you and your caller.
Stephen, let him finish.
Keeping fairness in the system and making sure that people who do not choose solar or can't afford it don't end up having to maintain the grid for those who do. There is a benefit to having solar energy, but that's why the NAACP supports us. That's why the Hispanic Chamber supports us. That's why the Black Business Chamber supports us, and many others that you're going to see roll out, because they want fairness.
Sure, and to be fair and clear, there's a broad coalition in support of Amendment 1 and a broad and diverse and bipartisan coalition in opposition to Amendment 1. And so let's get your final thoughts on this, beginning with Screeven and Stephen. Screeven Watson, your final case to the listeners.
Yeah, Melissa, thanks for having us. And listen, no matter what, Steve and I can disagree, the fact that we're discussing solar energy in Florida is a good thing. We passed Amendment 1, as you said earlier, Amendment 4 in August. Amendment 1 is polling very well. We have broad support. We believe that this is a good thing for solar energy, but solar needs to be done right. That's why I got involved in this. And again, you know, Mr. Smith's people think if you don't support them, you're anti-solar, but that's not true. Amendment 1 will promote solar, Melissa, but do it in a fair way that we don't become Arizona, which has had a black eye on solar, and we protect consumers and make it fair, because it's not fair for people who can't afford or don't choose solar to subsidize those who do.
Stephen Smith.
Yeah, and so here's the thing. Follow the money. Why are the utilities spending $21 million? Why are they papering your mailbox with these flyers and everything? Because it's exactly what he just said. They want to do it their way. They want to control the market. They're monopolies. They don't want customers generating their own power and therefore buying less, $21 million. And here's the thing. VoteNoOn1.org has the facts, has the information. You can go to that website. They would not be doing this if they did not have a financial interest in doing this. You don't see people spending $21 million for the illusion of consumer protection, that they're not going to be more with this. They're not going to get you any more right to own and lease solar. You already have that right. That's just eye candy. Follow the money and focus on who's behind it.
All right. Thank you both so much for being with us. A very spirited discussion on Amendment 1, as we were joined by Stephen Smith of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and Screeven Watson with Consumers for Smart Solar. Gentlemen, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
Much more still ahead later. What activists are doing to prevent the spread of HIV in Jacksonville. But up next, helping young adults from college to career. The growth of Year Up. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, vice presidential candidates Tim Kaine and Governor Mike Pence go head-to-head in their only debate of the campaign. Morning After analysis, what we learned about the candidates and the issues. At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJZT, your community, your world.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, a website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part 2. Sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, it's called Year Up, and it's the nation's fastest growing youth development program serving young adults ages 18 to 24. Now, Year Up is a one-year, high-support, high-expectations program, and it provides low-income young adults with wraparound services, everything from skill development to college credit, corporate internships, a whole range of support. Last year, Year Up expanded here into Jacksonville in partnership with Florida State College at Jacksonville. We're pleased to welcome Executive Director Rob and Tanya Watson, External Relations Manager Richard Naylor, and Asia Howard, a recent graduate of Year Up. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Robin, let's begin with you. This is really promoting the idea of college to career for young adults that need extra support. Tell us a little bit about it.
So we are in high expectation, as you characterized our program, and we are about moving the needle from poverty to prominence and giving them an opportunity to explore through the rigors of the program their, to turn grit into excellence and then be able to go into a career.
And for a lot of young adults who come from low-income households, they just don't have the resources that a middle or upper-middle-class child or teen might have. This sort of fills that gap.
Absolutely. I mean, we look at the failed family construct, community construct, and educational system, and we are taking them and, you know, really supporting them to excellence and to entry-level professional careers.
And Richard, Year Up is expanding in Jacksonville in partnership with FSCJ, so more young high school graduates and young adults will be able to take advantage of this.
Right, correct. High school graduates are anyone with a GED. We definitely want to make sure that people know that it's a high school diploma or GED. If you're 18, 24, you can reach out to us and be a part of our program. And we are expanding. And the reason why we are expanding is because our corporate partners here in town have really embraced our program. They really love our interns that we send to them. The interns are doing great work for them. And so that is why we are expanding.
Asia, tell us about your experience with Year Up. Where did you go to high school? Where are you right now?
Well, my experience is I'm actually transplanting to Jacksonville. I'm from Newark, New Jersey. I graduated from Eastside High School some years ago. And right now I'm actually a loan closer at PNC Mortgage.
And how did Year Up help you get that job?
The way Year Up helped me get that job is in partnership with our inaugural partners for internship. I interned for 6 months at Everbank in their mortgage department, which actually gave me the foot in the door to build up a career in the mortgage industry.
And did you go to college?
No, actually, when I entered into the Year Up program, that gave me my push and my motivation to start back into school.
Are you in school now?
Yes.
Where are you going to school?
I am still at FSCJ.
And so when are you going to graduate, and what will your degree be in?
I am in pursuit of my business administration degree, and hopefully I'm class of 2017.
Very nice. And how do you feel Year Up made a difference for you?
Year Up made a difference by giving me the support that I needed to go back to school. Although I had some at home, it was just having that external support and someone, you know, motivating you, having, you know, my learning community of students being able to help with studying time, tutor time with subjects we weren't really getting right away, having my coach mentor me in the right direction of, you know, this is how you should present your resume and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, Year Up was a really great part of my life.
So, Robin, Tanya Watson, that coaching, that mentorship can make all the difference.
Absolutely. Asia is a prime example of a young woman. She has a young child. She's married. She came into the program. She's just been a rock star. And I think we're a behavior modification program. So there's a contract in place. The students sign this contract. If they're late, there's all these rules and they're infractioned. And consequently, through this, they really gain that confidence and self-esteem that says, I can do it and I can take it on. So,
and the track record so far in Jacksonville is positive, Richard. A positive outcome for your enrollees of 85%.
Yeah, that's correct. And to define that for our audience, Europe defines a positive outcome as one of three things. One, the graduate is full-time employed, earning $16 or more an hour. Two, they're either in a full-time four-year degree program, or three, they're going to work full-time, school part-time, or vice versa.
And those are all metrics you're hitting, Asia. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And as we mentioned, last year you began with 120 young adults. You're hoping to expand that pie.
Yes, that's correct. We're growing. Very excited. We will serve 160 in 2017.
And if someone's listening to this right now and they want to make sure that the young adult they know gets involved, how can they get in touch with you?
So yearup.org. Right. Is one of the easiest ways. And also, if they come to Florida State College at Jacksonville, downtown off of West State Street, we on the third floor, we'd welcome you.
It's Europe Jacksonville. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
She's Executive Director Robin Tanya Watson, External Relations Manager Richard Naylor, and graduate Asia Howard. And we'll be right back. From the panhandle to the peninsula, the Sunshine State's politics are as hot as the weather. Trump versus Clinton, the race for the U.S. Senate, new political boundaries and familiar issues. Join 89.9 every Friday at 1 p.m. for Decision Florida. Let your voice be heard.
On the next Fresh Air, Bruce Springsteen. We just recorded the interview at his home studio in New Jersey. Springsteen has a new memoir called Born to Run.
I come from a boardwalk town where almost everything is tinged with a bit of fraud. So am I.
We talked about growing up and the experiences that shaped his life and music. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, this year, the American Physical Therapy Association is focusing on tackling the nation's opioid epidemic by educating Americans on the benefits of physical therapy, especially in October. It happens to be National Physical Therapy Month. Now, we've been looking at the impact of the opioid epidemic and the many groups and companies trying to address it, and as well as the people who've been affected by it, as part of WJCT's ongoing community thread discussion that we're conducting on radio, TV, and on social media. So right now, as part of that, we're going to take a closer look at the benefits of physical therapy as an alternative to pain medication, which can lead to addiction. Laura Bunso-Bittencourt is a physical therapist and president of Smart Body PT. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And of course, physical therapy has a range of benefits, but as we talk about the opioid epidemic, you really want to get the word out that this is something people need to consider before resorting to pain pills. Why? And why is that such a better choice for your body?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that the American Physical Therapy Association has made this a priority right now and that we're actually discussing this as a country because it is such an epidemic. But we believe that the body is brimming with life and has powerful intelligence to be able to heal itself. And that's something that can actually be impeded once you are on opioids. And we have the expertise in physical therapy to be able to guide your body into the right direction to promote the healing.
And you use it for a range of problems, everything from pelvic floor dysfunction, back pain, incontinence, radiation recovery, a childbirth. It really is an unlimited number of medical conditions that you treat at your facility.
Well, physical therapists are experts in the musculoskeletal system. So anywhere you have striated muscle, you have an area that we could potentially treat. For example, your pelvic floor muscles, your vaginal rectal muscles, they're striated just like your biceps and your quadriceps. They can be weak, they can get a muscle spasm, you can pull them just like you could pull your hamstring.
Do you have patients come to you who've tried pain medication and are trying to transition off of it?
Absolutely. We have people that are on every end of the spectrum with that. We have some people that have just taken themselves off and gone cold turkey. We have some people that are working with a pain management doctor. And that's something we don't do the pharmaceutical management portion of that. We're helping them with their body, but we work with other providers to help them with that.
And you also use biofeedback.
We do. We use a specialized kind of biofeedback, though. And it looks a lot like an EKG for your heart. Some people have heard of biofeedback in the psychology realm, but this has to do with the physical body. And we have state-of-the-art biofeedback equipment at our facility. Of people travel from all over the world to come and do this with us.
How does it work? How does it help the body?
Well, your vaginal and rectal muscles, like I'm sitting here right now, and if you're looking at me, you wouldn't know if I'm contracting or relaxing those muscles. And because it's an area of the body that you can't see when you're exercising it, the biofeedback allows you to visualize it on a computer screen, just like you can't see what your heart is doing without seeing it on a computer monitor.
Now, it is National Physical Therapy Month. What are some of the other types of PT that you use to help patients?
In our facility, because we specialize in pelvic health, we are treating all kinds of dysfunctions that people have really never heard of and as far as the pelvis goes. Pelvic pain, pain with intercourse, leakage of urine, leakage of stool, constipation has to do with the vaginal and rectal muscles. And so types of treatments are going to be highly specialized. All of our rooms are private. We have closed doors.
And let's face it, this is a delicate subject to talk about.
Absolutely.
But I think it also brings out the fact that pain can affect every area of the body. And people are often in so much pain that they'll do anything to relieve it, which has led to our opioid problem.
Absolutely. And especially pain in the pelvis. There's a lot of shame associated with that area of the body and some cultures and some families. And we are hoping to really start more conversations about pelvic pain. A lot of times in our Western medical culture, when you have a woman that hurts between her belly button and her knees, and no one can figure it out, she's either advised to go drink a glass of wine and just relax and enjoy it, or take some pain pills first. And so we want people really to know that there are some other options to be able to address these issues.
Sure. And it's Smart Body Physical Therapy here in Jacksonville. It is National Physical Therapy Month, and there are alternatives to opioids if you are in pain.
Absolutely. And we actually have a workshop next week, Tuesday night, October 11th, at our facility, which is 6639 South Point Parkway, with Dr. Justin Spooner, who is a pain management physician, and Dr. Melissa Kaywood, and they're speaking about chronic pelvic pain.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's part of our community thread looking at the nation's problems with opioids. And we're speaking with Laura Bunso-Bittencourt, physical therapist and president of Jacksonville's Smart Body PT. More in a moment.
Banking is a business that affects people's lives.
It's difficult to make a loan of that size and earn an appropriate amount of income to be able to pay the bill.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How low-income black neighborhoods in Detroit are at a mortgage disadvantage. That is next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT is a community-supported station, and your contribution helps programs like our radio reading service for those who are visually impaired or have difficulty handling printed materials. If you'd like to specifically help radio reading, denote that on your check and send it to us at WJCT 100 Festival Park Avenue, Jacksonville, Florida, 32202. And thanks for helping us give voice to the printed word.
I'm Fred Child. Composer Bruce Adolph joins us every week with a musical game. Play along, see if you can name the hidden tune, and the composer whose style Bruce is mimicking. Our piano puzzler is on the way, plus highlights from concert halls around the world on the next Performance Today from APM. Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back to the show. Well, finally this hour. More than 60% of people living with an HIV diagnosis here in Jacksonville are African American, underscoring the immediate need for leaders to take action, including those from the faith community. Now, you might have been following the path of Hurricane Matthew as it snakes its way up the Florida coast. We are watching that storm very closely here at 89.9, and we want you to keep listening throughout the rest of this week for the very latest on the storm. Unfortunately, because of Matthew, an HIV training session that was scheduled in Jacksonville for tomorrow has been postponed. However, we're still going to talk about the issue of HIV on the First Coast right now with Initiative Ambassador, the Reverend William Francis. He's on the line. Good morning, Reverend Francis.
Good morning, and how are you this morning?
Doing well, thanks. And sorry to hear that this training session in Jacksonville has been postponed due to the storm. It was going to happen at the Bob Hayes Sports Complex and Legends Center tomorrow, along with the NAACP and the Florida Department of Health. But let's talk about the issue. More than 60% of people living with HIV in Duval County are African American. It has hit that community harder than any other here on the First Coast. It's certainly a major public health problem. Can you share a little bit more about what we know about HIV here in Northeast Florida?
Yes, certainly. I want to thank you for having me on air on tomorrow and praying for the area as well. But as you have said, 64% of African Americans are diagnosed there with HIV, yet they only make up 21.7% of the population. Out of that number of those living with HIV, 64% being men, 36% being women. And this initiative really wanted to address HIV within the black communities and communities of color from social justice perspective. So excited to get to Jacksonville and to work with our faith leaders there addressing the epidemic.
Sure. And the website is theblackchurchandhiv.org. And can you talk a little bit more about how this initiative is working to reframe HIV as a social justice issue? What does that mean exactly?
Certainly. Social justice has been heavy in the fight with civil rights and slavery, economic opportunities, employment rights, voter registration, et cetera. When we look at HIV, what we see is that the epidemic is hardest hit in the Southeast. But what we also see is the epidemic is hardest hit in areas of poverty, lack of education, lack of access to care, et cetera, mass incarceration, different things of that nature. All of those rates overlap here in the Southeast. So when we look at it from a social justice perspective, it sort of takes away the morality, takes away the spirituality, and we have to look back at the humanity of HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus. And asking the black church, which makes up over 20 million here in the U.S., over 21,000 black churches, to get involved because it really affects the communities in which they serve. We address self-stigma. We address stigma. We definitely address testing within the church facility and the communities that they serve, but just looking at it using the social justice framework.
And how do you see African-American churches addressing stigma? What are some of the challenges that go along with that, particularly for people of faith who are, because of their faith, they frown on certain sexual behaviors and homosexuality? What about that part of it?
There are going to be challenges with theology and ideology. But the one thing that I always say in these trainings, let's put the theology of it all aside. And are we not called as faith leaders to save lives before we save souls? If we are called to save lives before we save souls, then we have to offer folks help, we have to offer folks hope, and then we must offer them healing in that order. Help, hope, and healing. So that is one of the things that we have a very robust conversation, that we have to accept people where they are, meet their needs where they are. And folks in the church that come for help may not look like us, smell like us, act like us, or dress like us, but we are called to go into the communities that we serve and do better.
Sure. And as I mentioned, unfortunately, due to Matthew, the hurricane that's making its way toward Jacksonville, hopefully will not hit Jacksonville. We're going to keep a close eye on that, of course. The training session you were planning to be part of tomorrow at the Bob Hayes Complex has been postponed. You were going to be part of this along with the NAACP and Duval County Department of Health. Now that that's been postponed, can you share a little bit about the progress of this as we track the storm's path?
Sure. We will be rescheduling that event as soon as possible. Jacksonville is part of a 45-city plan as we go around the country to areas hardest hit by HIV. So we will definitely be getting back to Jacksonville as soon as possible to begin working with faith leaders. Some of those that I had RSVP'd have a very strong history in doing HIV ministry, social justice ministry, and just reframing how the ministry is and really amping it up with other churches and faith-based organizations in the area to support the state health department in doing the work there in Jacksonville. So as soon as we get it rescheduled, you had mentioned the website. You can also find us on Twitter as well, Black Church of HIV, or on that Facebook page with the updated information on the new event.
And it's my understanding, Reverend, that when you look at the statistics from around Florida, Duval County, particularly the north and northwest side of our city, is one of the most impacted areas in the state, even the southeast, when it comes to the prevalence of HIV. Is that accurate?
It is accurate. And again, that overlaps. If you look at rates of poverty, mass incarceration, unemployment rates, different things of that nature, all of these things sort of overlap in areas in the Black community and where people of color live. And that's some of the things that this initiative addresses as we approach our denominations to support, as we approach our seminaries to support, and then again, harnessing the power of BULFIT to address all of those issues using a social justice framework. If we can reduce homelessness, we can reduce HIV. If we can reduce poverty, we can reduce HIV, because HIV is a side effect of those social justice issues.
And so will you be challenging powerful faith leaders among some of the more influential Black churches in the city to talk about this in a different way at the pulpit? Is that part of this?
Yes, we have to reduce the stigma. We have to reduce the self-stigma. We have to end the shame, and we must end our silence. So not only are we challenging those faith leaders in what I call the high steeple churches, but we're also challenging those faith leaders that work with the no steeple, that are over the no steeple churches, those that are in the communities that are hardest hit. We identify them. We give them a very active plan using our pastoral brief that can be downloaded from our website. And then also we have an activity manual which gives some suggestions on what you can do to reduce HIV, especially testing, spiritual care and counseling, working with your prayer ministry, your youth ministry, different things of that nature. And we go through that manual and come up with best practices for the area. It's not about what I'm doing here in Atlanta or what others are doing in other areas. We really want to focus and harness the power there in Jacksonville to reduce those rates.
Reverend Francis, thanks so much for joining us on the line from Atlanta this morning to share this with our listeners. And we'll circle back with you when that training is rescheduled. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. Have a great day, everybody.
You too. He's the Reverend William Francis, part of the Social Justice Imperative Initiative, the Black Church and HIV. The training session on this has been postponed due to the path of Hurricane Matthew, but we will keep you posted on that and the storm as well. Keep listening to 89.9 throughout the day and throughout this week for the latest on Matthew. We are part of the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network, and we'll have the most up-to-date information. Please keep it tuned to us as we cover that storm. And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chepchik. And never miss a show. Subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. Next on Diane Rehm, VP candidate Senator Tim Kaine and Governor Mike Pence go head-to-head in their only debate of the election. Morning After analysis coming up next, what we learned about the candidates and their issues. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, stay safe, and keep listening for storm updates here at 89.9.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.